Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. We often hear about countries around the world that are struggling politically, and we don't always hear what impact that has, those political struggles have, on the health, the healthcare, the well-being of the people and the country. And I'm here on this, today is September 13th when this is being recorded, and I am in Geneva at a Global Nursing Leadership Institute, and one of the nurses who was selected to attend this institute is Dorothy Jillian Ngoma from Malawi. And we were just sharing lunch together, and I was quite startled by what she shared with me. And I asked her if she would come on to Health Styles and share with listeners in the United States the experience that she is having within her country and other Malawians are sharing and why she's so concerned about it. So let me introduce to you Dorothy Jillian Ngoma. Thank you so much for being with us, Dorothy.
Hello.
And she is a nurse midwife and a self-described unionist and the executive director of the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives in Malawi. So Dorothy, first tell people, what is the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives in Malawi?
Thank you. This organization is a union for nurses and midwives in the country. It's a membership organization. We have 7,600 nurse midwives in the country out of the total of 9,000 who are members. So about 85% of the nurse midwives in the country are members of this organization, which is a union. It's the only union for healthcare workers in the country. And it's affiliated to a mother body, which is Malawi Congress of Trade Unions. So our role is to lobby and advocate for all issues that affect nurses, midwives, but we also carry issues for other healthcare workers, although they may not be members, and most importantly, for the patients, mothers, women, children, you know, those people we take care for. And we feel that if they don't have a voice, just like the nurses and midwives who are members, If our communities and members don't have a voice for issues that concern them related to health, that also would be an issue for the nurses. We speak for them. And I happen to be the leader of that organization for 5 years now. And I developed the union because previously we only had a small association which was weak and voiceless. And I realized we could not go on like that. So I decided we needed a strong system, and therefore I and my colleagues decided let's develop a union, and then I was in the forefront, and for the past 5 years, that's what I've been doing, growing the union, speaking for the nurses and midwives, speaking for the communities, mothers, children who don't have a voice, especially to government, who, you know, when, for example, they are not providing adequate resources for care, drugs and things like that. And so we are fighting every day to make sure that those are provided for, although it is very difficult and many times we just don't get much.
Yes, I shared with you a little bit ago that when I was editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing, we published a photojournalism essay by Christine Gorman and her colleague who was the photographer. And I apologize, I'm not remembering the photographer's name. But they spent time in Malawi and they wanted to learn about healthcare in Malawi, and they decided that to do that, they should follow nurses, that they should see health and healthcare through the eyes of nurses. And I was stunned, and this was several years ago, then I was stunned that, for instance, one nurse in a hospital might be taking care of 60 very seriously ill patients who in the United States would be in intensive care unit, one nurse to one patient.
Exactly.
So things have been very challenging and difficult for quite some time.
Yes, exactly. And maybe you are saying this was a few years ago. I would say maybe things were better then. Mm. Now things are worse. Nurses are taking care of sometimes even up to 100. You go in a pediatric ward. In fact, we should actually be a hospital because this is a referral pediatric hospital where you find maybe 300 to 400 very sick babies. There will just be maybe 3 to 5 nurses, and all of them probably not even registered nurses. They are nurse technicians or enrolled nurses taking care of these very sick babies.
Others enrolled nurses being
enrolled,
students.
Enrolled nurses. Taking one of them would be in charge.
Of 100 babies, sick babies.
300 or 400 very sick babies. And there would also be 300 mothers. So in this ward, this is one ward, there will be probably 600 people. Very sick babies and women, and you only have maybe 3 to 5 nurses on duty. It's what? Very hard. It's very, very hard.
What could the nurses possibly do with that many people?
They don't have a choice. Yeah. At most instances, in fact, when you walk in that ward, I mean, I'm giving an example of Kamuzu Central Hospital. This is where, you know, it's the closest hospital to where my union offices are. You go in there, you don't see the nurses. You only see the mothers, the babies, and you wonder, are there nurses in this place? Chances are, maybe they are in the intensive room, you know, care room, putting up IVs, blood transfusions. Very difficult to put on. Maybe babies who are collapsed. Yeah. Maybe who are having severe diarrhea. They're needing IVs. And
intravenous lines and intravenous feedings.
Exactly,
fluids.
Yes. And maybe you are lucky if you find one doctor and maybe one or two clinical officers. Mm. You know, trying to examine the babies and identifying their problems and writing prescriptions. And as I am saying now, I mentioned the fact that things are worse. As I'm talking now, we have no drugs in the country.
No medications.
No medicines, not even Panadols in most.
Not even?
Panadols.
What is that?
This, it's just like, pain relieving, you know, tablets for pain.
Oh, pain relievers.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like aspirin. Oh. Aspirins, you know, that's the lowest end. And then, you know, they are in some districts just a few weeks ago, they couldn't do surgeries because they didn't have, you know, major drugs like pethidines and morphines to, you know, after surgery to give to the patients. And all the patients are asked to buy it alone if they have the money. Some don't. So they're just doing just emergency surgeries. Even gloves. We are short of gloves. We are short of everything. And it's worse in the rural areas. So the health centers are there with no medicines. So the women come with babies with diarrhea. We cannot put up intravenous infusions because we don't have the solutions to put up the IVs.
So
it's that difficult.
If I, for example, have a cancer and I'm in pain, I am suffering in pain. I'm not getting pain relief. Is that correct?
You won't get anything unless maybe your family has got a bit of money, and then the only thing they can buy in the shop would be aspirins or, you know, those minor pain relief.
Yeah,
yeah, minor. Wow. But most of them will not get anything because they're extremely poor. And then I remember a situation where this nurse at night, she had this patient who was in severe pain, and she had to stand in the middle of the ward and ask the patients, is there anybody who has extra tablets of this pain relief or Panadols or something, so that she could borrow to give to this patient who didn't have anything. And the idea was, okay, let me borrow the 2 tablets and I'll replace them in the morning when this patient's family will go and buy, and I'll give it back to you. And that's the situation nurses are working in. Very, very frustrating. And some of them are so fed up, they don't feel like going to work anymore. And because we are also extremely short of fuel many times, there are large queues of fuel. You know, the whole country is undergoing very difficult political times, economic times. The donors have stopped supporting us.
No foundation support at this point.
We have few pockets here and there, but we are talking about a country of 13 million people.
30?
13 million people, and we are landlocked. We don't have any mineral resources or anything that we can sell. It's maybe a bit of farming. So we are heavily reliant on donors. Mm. But I'm sure you are aware that my country actually, you know, sent away the British envoy, you know, to the country. And then we've been in big trouble politically because of the management or mismanagement of the system. And so many donors have cut us out, or they are just put things on hold. So because of that, and the poverty that is in the country, the government cannot afford to buy the drugs or anything we need. So everything economically has gone down, and that's why we're extremely short of everything. And because we fuel, you know, we have to have the foreign exchange money, which we don't have to buy fuel offshore. So the ambulances cannot go to pick women who have maybe obstructed labor, or maybe they are bleeding and they need to be transferred to a major hospital for surgery. And even if they are transferred late, they go there, there are no gloves, there are sometimes no medications. So it is that difficult, and some women are dying because of that.
In fact, you have a very high maternal and infant mortality rate.
Extremely high.
Yes.
It's at about 650 per 100,000, one of the highest in the world.
Yes.
Even our child mortality rate is very high, you know, with malaria, tuberculosis, diarrheas. Yeah. And, you know, half the time we don't have even antimalarials.
Yeah.
This is a country that is heavily infected with malaria. And we run short of antimalarial drugs for children, for pregnant women.
Yes.
It's bad.
Yes.
It's very bad.
So who is your president?
Our president currently is President Bingu wa Mutharika.
He was elected.
He's elected. Actually, he's doing his second term now. He was elected first term. You know, things seem to be okay because he had a majority opposition in the parliament.
The parliament. So he didn't. His party did not have a majority.
No.
So he had to work with a parliament of the opposite party.
Exactly. And that time things were rough for him because the opposition were giving him a rough time to do well, and he did very well. And I remember even us from civil society feeling sorry for him and coming to support him when, for example, he had an impasse one time in parliament where the opposition were refusing to sign for, you know, the budget to get through. And we had to go to the street to support him for the budget to pass, because we were saying as nurses, our salaries are in there, therefore pass the budget. There are drugs for patients, sign the budget very fast. And they did. Came second term, we gave him a majority in parliament. And that's where the trouble started. Because then, as a leader, instead of being a leader for the people, he stopped that, and now he's a leader for himself and doesn't care about anybody or whatever you say. The resources have been plundered and used for things that shouldn't be a priority, because personally, I think drugs should have been a priority. Food. You know, during the first term, he did well, you know, very well in food and part of the second term. But now it's all the social security issues. We've reached a time where even salaries cannot be paid.
Mm.
Civil servants go without salaries sometimes. Nurses in the year went 3 months, 4 months without pay. Even as I'm talking now, there are some nurses who have gone for 6 months, have not been paid. Others have quit. They've gone home to stay because they can't continue anymore.
But so if the country has no money, how do you pay them?
I know what you're talking about, but the question is, how did we reach to a situation where the country doesn't have money? We have always had money. We've always been supported. The British have been on our side. In fact, 50% of the healthcare workers, skilled healthcare workers salary in the country, was the, you know, which we called a top-up salary, was being paid for by the British government. We've had other countries in EU, the Germans, the Norwegians, they've come to our aid, have supported us. About 90% of the healthcare budget was being supported by these countries, you know, resources in the basket, which we call the SWAP project. We were being supported, we were okay. But you know what happened? Early in the year, the president, for whatever reasons, as the civil society and others were complaining about mismanagement of the country, the British got into trouble because of certain information that got out, which the president came across, which is was talking about the Malawians' complaints about mismanagement of the economy. And President Bingu wa Mutharika threw away the British envoy. The British ambassador, you know, sent him home packing within 72 hours. And what did the British do? They also sent the Malawian ambassador home packing. And then things went from bad to worse. And now the other European governments are just watching on the side. They are waiting for my president and the country to clean up our house because of those mismanagements. Money has been abused. A good example is where the president bought himself a jet worth 4 billion kwachas. This is
4 billion
kwachas. This is approximately, I don't know whether it is, I don't know how many, 200 million or whatever dollars. He bought himself a personal jet. When we don't have drugs, when women are dying, the high maternal mortality rate, that money should have been used to buy drugs. What about the fuel that we are short of? So one of the civil society's demands, you know, actually we gave him a 20-point issue to say, sort out these problems. We need fuel, we need clean water, we need drugs in the hospitals, we need numbers of health, skilled healthcare workers, we need money to train more nurses and midwives. And the list goes on. Now, instead of him answering to that, what does he do? He just plunders and plunders and plunders the resources.
The donors
are watching, and then they are saying, clean your house, we are ready to support you. Then he says, this is my country. Yes. I can do what I like with it. Yes. I'm leading a sovereign country. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me anything. Mm. So what do these donors do? Okay, then we just watch you do what you want. And then they stopped giving some of the money in some areas. So the country's economy has just crashed. And that's where we are now.
Let me remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles, and we're talking with Dorothy Jillian Ngomo, who is a nurse midwife and a unionist. She's executive director of the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives in Malawi. And Dorothy, you have been an outspoken opponent of what's going on, and to the point that it's threatened your life.
Exactly.
Tell us what happened.
Exactly. A few months ago, because I, as a union leader and a leader within the Malay Congress of Trade Unions, we joined the rest of the civil society leaders to campaign against these issues to the government. We wrote a petition in February with all the issues that we took to the president directly. I was one of the eight that went to the president palace to actually give him this petition to say, fix these issues. Now, when we came back, he didn't. And he told us point blank that he's not going to be pushed by civil society. So, unfortunately, we were very unhappy. And also, you know, the opposition, I mentioned that it's very weak. So civil society has taken the role that should have been played by opposition government.
What do you mean by civil society?
Civil society, like those of us who are within who are working in non-governmental organizations.
Right. Okay.
So, as a unionist, I belong to this group of civil society leadership, and what we are trying to do is to protect the interests of the majority. Malawians who don't have a voice. So we took it upon ourselves to speak out, and we took this petition to the president. We gave him an ultimatum that if you don't answer to this within a period of time, we'd go to the streets to demonstrate. And so he was trying to stop us, and then a few of us who were in there, those were the top leaders, were threatened with death. And
how were you threatened?
You know what they, for me, what they did was just send telephone messages and sent, yeah, on my phone I could get. In fact, the last one was, it was a question to say, where are you? And I was in my house. I said, I'm in my house. And then the voice said, get out of there because they are coming after you. Mm-hmm. I ignored it. I said, who is coming after me? And then within like 3-4 minutes, I got another call. Are you still there? So I said, yes, I'm in my house. Get out. I got 4 phone calls within 10 minutes. Mm. And then I said, wow, this is serious. Where do I go? But I packed up very fast because I knew my colleagues had also been threatened. And one of the young women was also on the team, got threatened, but she was in another district. So I just packed and disappeared for, you know, I stayed out of my house for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But what I did was, because there are some government officials that I knew, I called them and I said, I just thought very fast, I said, I'll accuse them that they are the ones who want to kill me. So I just called them and said, I got this information that you guys want to kill me. What have I done to you? And then it was like, no, 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 it is not true. Somebody is just wanting to make the government look bad. But they did that to several people. Mm-hmm. To the extent that, of course, I didn't get any beating or whatever, because I came back when I was told it's okay, the police is watching over you and nothing is going to happen. But two of my colleagues, 2 weeks ago, one of them, his office was petrol bombed. Mm-hmm. And 3 days ago, one of my colleagues on the team, his house was petrol bombed. Mm-hmm. And it was burnt, actually, while I'm in Geneva. And I'm very worried even when I'm here that maybe something can happen to me, because now I'm in the lead team of 6 people who are trying to discuss with the government to broker peace, and that we have a UN
to broker peace between
with the government and us to discuss the crucial issues, because we are saying we will not stop until the president says something and does something. Yeah. And then the government is not happy with us. Mm. And that's why, because we've also given an ultimatum to say on 21st, we are going to demonstrate.
On the 21st of September.
Of this month, yes. And the last demonstration, which was a month ago, 20 people were killed. They were shot by the police. They were killed. And we know that if we go to demonstrate.
For demonstrating.
Yes. If we go to demonstrate again, more people are going to be killed. Mm. And we don't really want to go and demonstrate because these are poor people who have nothing. They will go to demonstrate because they are wanting drugs. We are asking for drugs. We are asking
for medications.
Medications. Mm-hmm. We are asking for fuel so that our vehicles, mm-hmm. ambulances can be on the move. We are asking for government to take responsibility, social responsibility mm-hmm. of. You know, or because we voted them mm-hmm. in, we voted this president in, and therefore he's answerable to us.
Yes.
But now it's like he's answerable to himself and his team, and that's not good enough. So he is trying to stop us from asking him to do the right thing. So therefore we cannot be intimidated. And I've told myself, I will not be intimidated because it's not about me. It's about the women out there. The children who are dying with malaria, and we can't give them anti-malarials yes. because government has chosen to use their fuel resources to buy things that are unnecessary.
Like private jets for the president.
Yeah, like his own private jet. Actually, one of our demands is that he must sell that private jet and use that money to buy the anti-malarials.
Yes.
And there are many things that he should be able to do. And you know, we have had the taxes increase sometimes 100% for bread, for milk. For, you know, basic things. And those are the things the rural area people sold, you know. They need that. You cannot put tax on milk 100% on bread. No. That is wrong. So we are saying that must change. Now, instead of him doing the correct thing, he is intimidating those who are carrying the message.
Yes.
We are just messengers. Yes. Of the poorest people. By the way, the majority of Malawians, maybe 60%, 70%, live below $1 per day.
Except up to 70% live below less than $1 a day.
They're extremely poor. Mm-hmm. They cannot afford to buy an anti-malarial. you know, which is probably will cost about maybe $2 or $3. They can't afford that because they are living at $1 below poverty.
So, Dorothy, I'm afraid that we are out of time, and I wondered, do you by any chance have a website that you keep information on, or do you have any means for the public to stay abreast of what's going on? You probably don't have those.
No. We don't have that. But I think if there are some who follow maybe on maybe MalawiNet.
MalawiNet?
Or NyasaNet.
Maybe. Spell that.
N-Y-A-S-A.
Nyasa. N-Y-A-S-A dot N-E-T.
Yeah, just NyasaNet. Yeah, yeah. I know there are a lot of Malawians who post a lot of information, what is happening. So if you can follow that, you should be able to get a lot of information about what's going on now.
Well, I, you will be in our hearts and our minds and our prayers. I worry for your safety.
Thanks for your
prayers. I worry for your country.
Thank you.
And they're fortunate to have you as a fabulous nurse leader doing this important fight. We've been talking with Dorothy Jillian Ngoma, a nurse midwife and executive director of the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives in Malawi. To stay abreast of what's going on in Malawi, go to www.n as in Nancy, y a s as in Sam, a dot n e t. That's nyasa.net. Dorothy, thank you so much for joining us on Health Styles.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
I'm Diana Mason. You've been listening to Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us on our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in.